Chapter 16, Visualizing Magic. The group split up and spent the afternoon exploring their new, and possibly permanent, home. The town was surrounded by a stone parapet with a tall wooden fence on top. There was only one entrance with a massive, heavily guarded gate. Barracks lined the wall on one side of the gate, and the purification cabin sat on the other. The communal garden was maintained in the center of town, surrounded by shops, the town hall, the kitchen, and the dining hall. The royal residence was behind the town hall at the end of the town farthest from the gate, and houses, separated by narrow paths, filled the remaining area. There was also some sort of large bathhouse next to the royal residence, which was available by appointment. Most of them tried to take naps after dinner, but no one was able to sleep. They gathered at Narayana's house shortly after sunset and quietly discussed Earth, mirth, possible careers, and the general unfairness of the universe. Tara was nowhere to be found until she knocked on Narayana's door at precisely midnight.
"Follow me,"
whispered Tara as she led them down the lane. "There is very little magical energy out here, so I needed to find someplace dark, quiet, and private for this lesson." She guided them to the courtyard in front of the bathhouse and instructed them to find comfortable places to sit before beginning her lesson. "How familiar are you with responsibilities and wills?" she asked.
"Well, Mark has the responsibility to clean his room, but he doesn't have the will to do it," joked Stavius, and everyone chuckled. "And both Nancy and I have the will to win," added Narayana.
"Yeah, you can say that again," said Rosera under her breath.
"That's not what I mean. I'm talking about magic," said Tara. She saw their blank expressions and continued, "There are two classes of magical spells, temporary spells and persistent spells, and they are just what you'd expect. Temporary spells typically involve actions like wiping the dirt off your bodies or cooking your dinner. They are magical actions which happen and are gone. Permanent spells are usually associated with objects which persist. You might use them to build a house or enhance a sword or make a stone glow. These last until the person who cast them releases them, or until that person dies.
Or until a prophecy hero with epic magical power breaks them so that his dragon friend can destroy a bridge," interjected Janice.
Stavius was glad it was dark enough to hide his blush.
"Yes, or until someone powerful enough breaks the spell," Tara clarified.
"Excuse me, but what does this have to do with anything useful?" asked Rosera. She was tired and had been looking forward to seeing magic and not listening to a lecture. Tara smiled at her and said, "Did you ever wonder about how persistent magic works?" It was evident that none of them had. Tara explained, "You aren't alone. Most people don't think about this, and it is never taught in school. You see, you are connected to every persistent magical object you create until that spell is broken or until you die. These links are called magical responsibilities. A minute amount of magical energy constantly flows over each link to maintain the spell. Now, most people never notice this flow because their powers and abilities grow as they age. However, the sheer number of permanent spells that people carelessly leave lying around begins to take a toll. That's why most older people tire so easily and start having less and less energy. They're walking around trying to support a lifetime of persistent magic."
"Wow, I never heard that," said Janice. "Is the amount of power needed to maintain a link proportional to the power of the spell? And does that mean that people who've cast a lot of spells will drain energy faster than those who haven't?"
Tara nodded and said, "That's right. It's called magic burnout, and it often happens to powerful magicians who are careless with their spells. It's why Stavius, who has never cast a spell in his life, can last longer outside a magic field than a powerful magician like yourself. All the magical energy around him goes towards supporting his life, while a percentage of yours goes to supporting every persistent spell you've ever cast."
"Which means that all those past spells are draining our batteries right now," groaned Rosera.
"Exactly," agreed Tara.
"But what about all the buildings and bridges in Septumculus? They are constructed with magic, but
They don't all fall down when their architects die, asked Elisa.
You are absolutely right, Elisa, agreed Tara, and that's where wills, legerdemain, and bankers come in.
Legerdemain are people trained to transfer persistent spells from one person to another. It's sort of like sleight of hand. Wills are the agreements to make the transfers. For example, a parent might hire a legerdemain to craft a will to transfer the house they magically constructed to one of their children.
Wills can also be used to transfer persistent spells to bankers, who are people capable of maintaining an incredible flow of magic.
Wealthy individuals, or companies, compensate bankers, legerdemain, and spell providers to build vast repositories of persistent magic. And, of course, they have accountants who keep track of all this.
So, one of the families might hire an architect to construct a building. Then they hire a legerdemain to craft a will to transfer the related spells he or she casts to a banker who maintains them. They can continue to have wills crafted to migrate these spells from banker to banker to ensure that the building will persist over many lifetimes.
Wow, I never knew any of that, marveled Janice.
Tara chuckled, nor would you need to for many more years. You are only 13, after all. But now you need to eliminate as many of your persistent spells as you can to save energy. And the first step is to be able to see the threads of your magical links.
Wait, are you saying that it is possible to see magical energy? Asked Narayana.
Tara looked at the girl with a quizzical expression and said, Yes, you've already seen it when Stavius was healing safe and destroying the bridge. Besides, I told you I was bringing you here to see magic. Weren't you paying attention? Now, face the bathhouse, relax your minds, and tell me what you see.
The six of them stared at the long, rectangular building for several minutes. They could barely see the structure since the only illumination came from the stars and the blue-green moon overhead. Stavius finally said, I can't see anything other than that purple bathhouse.
What do you mean by purple? Snapped Narayana.
Stavius was confused and said, what do you mean? The bathhouse is nothing but a drab purple box next to that larger, brighter purple building.
I don't understand your question, Narayana.
Tara interrupted with, Stavius is seeing the magical energy emanating from the bathhouse and the royal residence. These are the only places around here with any magical energy. The villagers are each allowed to spend 15 minutes in the bathhouse every week to recharge. It's called the bathhouse because it is also the only place where they can cast cleansing spells.
Tara explained that the first step in their training was to learn how to see static magic fields. They could move on to visualizing their persistent links once they mastered static fields, and then she would teach them how to prune those links.
Excuse me, but what do persistent links look like? Asked Stavius.
You'll know them when you see them, Tara assured him.
Well, the other heroes and Janice all have multicolored wispy fuzz blowing that way and that way, said Stavius as he pointed in two different directions.
Tara was surprised and said, Very good, those are their persistent links. Most of them flow back to spells your friends cast back home in Septumculus, with others linking back to the training valley.
Stavius said, But yours are different.
You only have a dozen or so, and they're thick. Most point back to Septumculus, I guess, but several of your links flow into the royal residence.
Tara explained, Yes, I keep my persistent spells to a minimum. I have spells on the supplies I was carrying, which are apparently stored in the royal residence. I also have a few persistent spells back in Septumculus, such as the house in which you have been living.
And there are also others heading off in several other directions, observed Stavius.
Tara curtly replied, Yes, there are, and they are none of your business.
Oh, and don't worry if you can't see anything tonight. This is a difficult skill to master, and we will keep trying. Perhaps Versara can share some of her meditation techniques to clear your minds.
Elisa exclaimed that she thought she saw the purple glow in the bathhouse for an instant, and the others redoubled their efforts. Stavius thought he could see a purple vein pulsing in Narayana's forehead, even in the darkness from her straining to see the light.
Several days passed without any further word about the contest with the guards, and the travelers settled into a routine as they waited. Tara and Elisa began working in the garden. They were unfamiliar and unskilled with physical labor, but enjoyed the feel of dirt between their fingers.
Stavius started washing dishes before moving into food preparation. He was hardly a chef, having taught himself how to cook in a world where everyone else used magic, but his practical experience in the kitchen helped. The other cooks decided he was trainable and accepted him, but he had never enjoyed cooking and eventually moved to the garden as well.
Janice, Narayana, and Versera, however, failed at every manual task they attempted.
They were so adept at using magic that they were frustrated by the time and effort required to plant, or sow, or clean with their hands. They eventually gave up searching for work and spent their days training to fight. Tara disappeared with Stavius every night while the others practiced looking for magic. Elisa could now easily see the purple glow of energy around the bathhouse, but not the auras around her friends. Versera occasionally glimpsed a purple light around the building from the corner of her eye, but it wasn't repeatable. Narayana, however, had no luck seeing anything and was unaccustomed to failure.
"Just relax, Narayana. You need to clear your mind and let all your tension flow out of your body. Concentrate on your breathing," advised Versera.
"Trust me, I know how to breathe, Versera. I've been doing it my entire life and am so good at it, I can do it in my sleep. I don't need to think about it. I just need to concentrate harder on my vision," grumbled Narayana.
"You'll never get into a meditative trance with that attitude," warned Versera.
Narayana growled, "I don't want to get into a trance. I want to see the pretty lights on that building. But go ahead and keep spewing your new age mumbo jumbo if you want to see what a real attitude is like."
"I wonder where Tara and Stavius go while we're working on visualization," said Elisa, trying to derail the impending argument.
Narayana said, "I don't know, but that boy sure has an awful lot of magical ability for someone who can't perform magic."
Janice agreed. "You have that right, but can you please keep it down, guys? I think I just saw a reddish glow around Versera's head."
"Ah, nuts! Now it's gone."
Stavius could now easily see the magical glow surrounding people and objects, but had no persistent links to Trim, since he had never successfully cast a spell.
He had other skills to develop, however, and Tara had brought him to an isolated corner of the compound to hone his abilities. Most of the world out here in this magical wasteland was dark, but Stavius began noticing hints of magic as his sensitivity to seeing it increased. He saw a trickle of magic oozing down a tree, like sap, and the occasional ephemeral wisp of magic swirling above the ground like an early morning fog. And he found a few tendrils of magical plasma poking up from the ground like the first tender sprouts of the spring. Tara was teaching him how to use his unique gift to draw this energy up from the ground. It was challenging and delicate work. The tendrils snapped and disappeared if he pulled too hard, but nothing happened if he didn't apply sufficient effort. He experimented until he found a method which worked and had drawn dozens of these tendrils into a dense, magical lawn after a week of evenings. Standing on this lawn was like standing in a magical pool, except that it made his feet tingle. Perhaps he was becoming adept at drawing magical plasma from the ground, or maybe his efforts had tapped into a stronger magical flow. Whatever the reason, his magic garden had grown to be a dozen feet in diameter, with an 8-foot-high fountain in the middle, which looked like a weeping willow tree. Well, that's what it looked like to someone who could see magical energy. Most people wouldn't notice anything.
Tara invited the others to visit Stavius's creation at the end of the second week, and he was nervous about their reactions. He had never created anything magical before, and it felt crude compared to what he had seen the others do.
Narayana was the first to speak as the group stopped at the edge of the magic lawn to stare.
"It's beautiful, Stavius. Look at the rainbow of colors cascading from the top of your fountain," she cried as she brought her hands to her mouth.
"I thought you couldn't see magic," said Stavius.
"No, I just can't see that stupid bathhouse," Narayana laughed. "How could I not see this? This is the most incredible light show I've ever seen."
"Wait until you step inside," Stavius grinned with pride.
Narayana carefully walked through the magic grass and stood under the fountain. Tears began streaming down her cheeks as she felt the warm plasma cascade over her head and shoulders. She felt more alive, refreshed, and relieved than ever before. They were never going to run out of energy to travel between these worlds. Nancy and their other Earth counterparts weren't going to slip into comas. They were going to have the chance to grow up and live full lives, even if their Mirth halves were going to be prisoners in this village.
They received notice of their contest with the guards the next morning. It was scheduled to take place in 2 days, and Terra asked whether they still wanted to go through with it. They now had an energy source, and they were starting to fit in with the townspeople. There was no longer a compelling reason why they couldn't stay here. Everyone, even Narayana, looked to Stavius for his reply, which was, "Heck yeah, I'm fighting." Narayana's face broke out into a broad smile as she said, "Me too. I'll never fit in being anyone's prisoner." The rest nodded in agreement, and Terra noted that they now had less than 2 days to figure out how to win.